This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The U.S. Supreme Court has temporarily blocked new voting maps for Wake and Mecklenburg counties. The decision is creating chaos, partly because it comes just days before candidates start filing for office. And a bill by Republican Senator Chad Barefoot would gradually lower class sizes in K-3 classrooms, and that bill comes with a number of surprises as well, some that limit the governor's control. Plus, the longest-serving lawmaker in the General Assembly announces his retirement. Here to talk about that and much, much more is our Capitol Bureau Chief, Jeff DeBerry. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Frank. You want to take a deep breath on the front end?
Well, it's a wacky week. You're thinking about what's going on in Washington, but it is even wilder in our state capitol. And some of that got obscured, I think, because of what was happening in Washington. But a lot on your plate. Let's talk about what's happening now. Talk about the maps and filing for public office in the state of North Carolina.
As listeners are aware, many, many legal challenges over the last 6 years, and there have been plenty of legal challenges going back 20, 30, 40 years that pertain to gerrymandering in this state, one of the most litigated states when it comes to illegal political boundaries. But here we are, and there are a number of legal challenges that are still working their way through, kind of sort of at the finish line, yet an election effectively starts on Monday when filing opens. So just moving from the top down quickly, we know this. There are 13 U.S. House seats. There will be races in all of those districts in 2018. The districts that are going to be in play are the same districts as 2016, barring something very surprising and unforeseen. At the state level, there are 170 districts, and more than 100 of those seats, or about 100 of those seats, have been redrawn since 2016 because of court rulings that have determined there were illegal racial gerrymanders in the state. And, you know, you change a puzzle piece, you change one seat in Cumberland County or in Durham County, you have to change potentially the boundaries of several others that are adjacent to those seats. So we will have new seats. We are reasonably certain that we know what all of those 170 seats, what those districts are going to be. We know that an election is going to begin, at least with candidate filings, official candidate filings on Monday, but more surprises are, of course, possible here.
Well, and you were talking about the state districts for the General Assembly. Those have been redrawn, and all of them were set to go into effect until the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in and said, wait a minute, not Wake and not Mecklenburg County. Those maps, those new maps, we don't like, right? What's happening now?
So lawmakers were ordered to redraw districts, which they did last August. After they drew that latest iteration of maps, some of the plaintiffs, the folks who challenged and said the maps aren't fair, the maps are illegal, they came back and they challenged some of the newer seats. So the court that you know weighed this argument said, we agree with the plaintiffs. Some of these seats are still illegal. They didn't go back to the General Assembly for essentially a third shot at redrawing the maps. They instead brought in a Stanford law professor and said to this law professor, Nathan Persily, he was a special master. You get the opportunity to redraw some of those maps. So he redrew, I believe it was 9 districts, and 6 of those districts have been upheld by the Supreme Court. They're the U.S. Supreme Court. They are going to be in play, those iterations drawn by the special master. As it pertained to Wake and Mecklenburg County, there was kind of a counter legal challenge brought by Republicans who said this guy personally, this Stanford law professor, shouldn't have redrawn these districts because we have something in our state constitution that prohibits redistricting mid-decade. So the Supreme Court earlier this week, are you lost yet? The Supreme Court this week said that, yes, indeed, we're going to hit pause on this. They didn't weigh in on the merits of the case, but they said we're not going to allow the special master's districts in Wake and Meck County to move forward. So we don't think that those will be in play.
Well, it is clear, and thank you for clarifying all of that. But also very clear that if you're trying to run for public office in the state of North Carolina, this is a challenging moment for you, and then ultimately for the voters of North Carolina as well, who have to make these choices in November.
Well, sure. Why not drop another little wrinkle on you, which is in our state, if you're going to run for office, you need to have established residency in the district in which you are going to run and need to have lived there for a year. Now, there's still some ambiguity about what the residency requirement is here. Do folks have to have lived in the district for a year? Is that waived? Do they have to have lived in it since last August? And I've still seen some competing back and forth on this. I don't believe that that year requirement is in effect right now. But to your point, as some of the boundaries are unclear, strategists are having, they're having some uncertainty in going out and recruiting candidates. You're not sure who it is you're able to recruit if you're not sure of the game, of the framework that's being played, right? So a little bit more certainty is coming on Monday. The experts, the analysts, the folks smarter than I really think that once the election effectively gets going, it's going to be much harder and more of a Hail Mary or a long shot for a court to step in and say, oh, you know, we got to stop. We got to change the. I mean, once it starts, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, one thing we thought we had certainty about was smaller class sizes in the state of North Carolina as part of education reform. But that has changed a little bit now, at least when those smaller class sizes can be felt in the classroom, based on a bill that made its way through the House yesterday. Tell us about House Bill 90.
Right. So lawmakers not recently passed a mandate, passed a requirement that kindergarten through third grade classes be capped. I believe it's at 17. I don't have the number in front of me, but smaller class sizes for K through 3. That was originally going to be implemented this year. Last summer, they kicked it back a year. So effectively, those smaller class sizes were going to have to go into effect for the 2018-19 academic year. However, at the same time, we've been hearing from educators, we've been hearing from education advocacy groups that are warning, hey, you're not providing enough funding, whereas if we are reducing class sizes, we're going to need more teachers. And if there isn't more funding on the table, they're going to have to pull from enhancement or specialty teachers. And we've heard from a range of folks across the state that said this could mean the laying off or the firing or the loss of art teachers and PE teachers and music teachers. So what they did yesterday is, in effect, they kicked back the implementation date another year. So the smaller class edict will not be required until the 2018-2019 year. It's going to be a 4-year rollout, and it pushes back a year. And they did also provide funding. It's, I think, in totality $249 million, but it's about $61 million in the first year. And, you know, this is something that both sides have been working on, calling for a fix to. And generally, this is something where you, I think, would have wide bipartisan support as you've got districts across the state that have been worried about this class reduction thing. So normally this kind of announcement would be celebrated by all, but of course the bill had other components in it, which makes it a little more dicey.
We are getting a legislative update today from Jeff Tabiri on the state of things. Yeah, so tell us about those little extras that are in this bill.
We'll start with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Listeners will likely remember that there was a key permit, I believe it was a water quality permit, that was approved by the Department of Environmental Quality, which is a government agency that falls under the Governor Roy Cooper's power. That came through last week. And at the same time, the governor, you know, announced, I mean, we learned about a $57.8 million fund that was procured, negotiated, you can use another word if you like, as part of this deal. We should note that this is also what happened in Virginia, state of Virginia. I believe former Governor McAuliffe and now current Governor Northam have been part of those conversations. So the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, West Virginia through Virginia, down through North Carolina. And North Carolina effectively thumbs up, green light, and said we'll go through with the project. And at the same time, this $57.8 million, and in Virginia, we should note they got $58 million. It was just about the same amount of money, would come in. And the governor said, governor here, Cooper, said this money will go into a third-party escrow account, and it'll be used for it's a mitigation fund. So environmental factors, you know, you're doing some deforestation. There could be some water quality issues. You're digging this huge pipeline across the state of North Carolina. It goes through, I believe, 8 counties. So he took some criticism initially as, you know, is this a pay-for-play thing? Like, well, what is this about here? This is a large sum of money. And then Republicans pounced, and they said, this is a slush fund. They called it a slush fund immediately. They said, you know, what's he going to do with this? Because obviously the legislature has made many maneuvers to try to limit the governor's power. If you give him $57 million, what could he do with that? I mean, he could, and I don't mean that from a negative connotation. He could say, all right, you know, Governor Cooper isn't happy with, say, Gen X funding. Could he just say, you know, we're going to push $5 million toward Gen X or $10 million? Okay. Well, they're calling it a slush fund, the Republicans. They've pounced on this. And then they've also said he simply can't do this, that, you know, appropriating money has to go through the bicameral legislation. That's established in the state constitution. And he, Cooper, is doing something that is not okay. So anyway, all right, in this bill yesterday, what the Republicans moved to do is require that all of the money in that $57.8 million fund will go to the eight counties and the school systems in the eight counties where this pipeline is coming through. So there's that. And go ahead, Frank. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to ask you, because I've only got about 30 seconds left, so I'm going to get a quick answer on this.
Sure.
Does anybody think it's a bad idea that the governor got enough money to plan for potential ecological and environmental damage? Sounds like a good thing to try to get from these companies that are going to benefit by the pipeline to get a little money up front just in case something goes wrong. Does anybody disagree with the governor on trying to get the money?
They would, I think, pivot and say this is about power, this is about optics, and they want to be involved in these goodwill negotiations and conversations. And as we've learned over the last year, the legislature doesn't want to give the executive branch an inch, and vice versa when applicable.
Jeff, we're taking up a collection around the station to get for a support group for you and Ken Rudin, so we'll keep you posted on that. Jeff DeBerry is our Capitol Bureau Chief. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Just ahead, we're going to talk about racial equality and workshops for white people only. We'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.